Hi there, this is Bob Eubanks, and you're listening to Fab Four Free For All. But doesn't everybody?
And welcome to another edition of the Fab Four Free For All, the Beatles podcast, where we three talk about everything Beatles and Beatles related. I am your moderator for tonight's episode, Mitch Axelrod, and I am joined by my friends, Rob Leonard.
Hello, everyone.
And Tony Triguardo.
Hi, folks.
And tonight we're continuing in the color scheme because we are talking about the Blue Album. Our last show was the Red Album, and this one is the Blue, officially called The Beatles, 1967 to 1970, although we may want to change that to 2023. But the Blue Album was re-released in November of 2023 on November 10th, and along with the Red, and it's doing very well in the charts as of this taping. And there's a, to me, well, let's just discuss. There are only 9 additional songs where the Red had 12. So the 9 additional songs they've added are Within You, Without You, Dear Prudence, Glass Onion, Blackbird, Hey Bulldog, Oh Darling, I Want You, She's So Heavy, I Me Mine, and Now and Then. Now, let's get it out of the way right away. Now and Then, we won't count as an additional song, even though it is. I think it fits beautifully with the whole thing, but we can go on after about that. And quite frankly, we will discuss the additional songs on this because there's a few WTF moments here, and I'm sure you'll all agree, and I'm sure I know.
We don't know if they'll all agree. That's why we
well,
do the show.
I have a feeling.
Because it's fun that, you know, people will vehemently disagree and say that, you know, we're idiots, and that's fun. So,
oh, yeah. Well, you know, anyway. That's just our wives and girlfriend. You're an idiot.
Very nice.
They vehemently disagree with everything. But so to me, the Blue is a bit anticlimactic or anticlimactic. Which one is it?
Climactic? Anticlimactic. Yeah.
Thank you.
Anticlimactic would mean that it's against the climate, but anyway.
Well, it is because yeah. It's blue and not.
And it destroys, you know, by making all those plastics, it's just,
right,
you know,
it destroys the planet.
Destroys the planet. Anyway.
But to me, it's anticlimactic because the Red was, it has all the songs that, you know, were never remixed before. And the Blue is using every song that they've, you know, all the songs that they've already done from 2017 on, even 15 on, are not being remixed again. And I want to discuss that a little at the end. But and just to let everybody know, all the songs except Penny Lane, all the songs that were on the Beatles One Plus DVD, which were remixed in 2015, are those mixes. Except if you're an Atmos person, which 1% of 1% of us are, they were remixed for 2023.
So at most 5 people have heard that. So
at most, yes. At thank most, you. Yeah.
No. For the 20 people who have Atmos.
Buy quad. Yeah, for the 20 people who buy quad.
Yeah, and those are Lady Madonna, All You Need Is Love, Hello, Goodbye, Hey Jude, Strawberry Fields, Get Back, Ballad of John and Yoko. But yet Penny Lane is the 2017 mix. Go figure. I don't know. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on in this Blue one, which we'll talk about. So only 6 songs were remixed. So, you know, this theoretically, this show shouldn't be as long as the Red one, he says with a wink. Because it takes us 10 minutes just to say hi.
Well, yeah, but I mean, again, look, the reality is, you know, and I wish I had the episode number. I'm sorry, folks, but we've reviewed the Blue Album in right. terms yes, of have. The content and how we feel about it and what it is as a compilation. So just to let folks know, if you're a newcomer to the show, welcome. We love you. We're glad you're here. Check out some of the older episodes. You could see, you could hear a discussion of the idea, the compilation of the Blue Album and what it is and what it means to us and stuff like that. But I think for this show, we're going to be, if I'm not mistaken, Mitch, the focus is going to be on the songs that have been newly added and the remixes of what was already there.
Yeah,
new mixes.
Yeah, we don't need to go into the, as you said, Tony, we've discussed this like 7 times because we've discussed the actual Blue Album. And then we've discussed every one of the remixes so far.
yeah,
you know, individually. So yeah, all of these songs are on those, on the, in those shows,
right,
individually, so to speak. So we're not really going to focus on those because we know what we've already felt about them. And you know, the, so as Tony said, the additional songs and the ones that were remixed. So overall, though, do you feel, guys, that maybe it is a bit anticlimactic versus the Red, like I do?
No. Well, eventually they're going to remix the rest of the catalog. So maybe in 10 years, maybe it feels anticlimactic. But right now, I mean, to me, the Red and the Blue has always been, you know, I don't want to say the gateway drug to the Beatles, but a lot of people became Beatle fans after getting these. But now the new generation is going to probably come in through Beatles One, only because it's a cheaper record. It's still a loss leader at some stores. They, you know, get, it's $10 still in many stores, or some stores, I should say, not all of them. But so, you know, it's 79 minutes on a CD. You know, it's all their hits. You know, so to me, I don't think that it's anticlimactic. I know what you're saying, but I think it's,
I mean, just compared to the Red, because
yeah, well, the Red has more more things we can talk about, but more things we can investigate.
Well, that's what I mean.
What we do.
Yeah,
but do we really think? I mean, I know what you're saying, Rob, about One, but I don't know. I have a feeling moving forward, I think that it's going to be a generational thing.
Yeah, I agree, Rob.
I think that now that the Red and the Blue are being reintroduced in this way, now that there's a longer edition of them, especially that, you know, the two CD versions are still two CD versions.
Right. Yeah, very important.
And the truth is, I have a feeling that those are going to displace, those are going to be there for anybody that wants their kids, grandkids to dip their toe in the water. I mean, you got to remember, too, One came around maybe at a time when they were not so certain that a big Beatles thing was going to do something that big.
Resurgence, yeah.
Now with, I think with the Red and the Blue back in vogue, I have a feeling that those are going to displace the One. Anybody that wants their kids, their grandkids, whatever, to do a dive, I think are going to splurge and do the Red and the Blue, because it's just more of an exploration than the single.
I agree, because, you know, One is just the hits. And while they did some real experimental stuff for a pop band in their situation, the Red and the Blue is an expanded version of the sense that the Beatles started out with Love Me Do and ended, you know, with Now and Then, I guess, if you want to look at it that way. But you know, the way that they kept moving up, so to speak,
yeah,
becoming better musicians, better songwriters, better producers, even.
And also, I think, and I brought this up a little bit, or touched on this a little bit, I think, last week with the Red album, but I think that now that the internet is pervasive, everybody's online, there are 8 million, you know, blogs, podcasts, whatever it is. I think the idea that a lot of the songs on the Red and the Blue album are part of the Beatles' history, beyond the hits.
Yes,
you know, I just think that there's something to, you know, read about. Even, you know, back in the USSR. Well, why do you write back in the USSR? You know, there are articles about it. There's the fact that, you know, who plays what on it. You know, there are things you could read about a lot of these songs, and I think it makes it so that, like, that deep dive is kind of an easy deep dive to get into, just because there's so much about all these tracks, you know. But
that's true. And actually, think about when the records came out in 1973, or when we bought them, and I bought mine in 1978. You know, the information about the Beatles didn't exist.
No,
the way it does today.
I mean, like I said, how many idiots were running around trying to find the single of Thingamabob, because it was written on the discography as being a Beatles single. And, you know, who the hell knew there was the Black Dyke Mills Band? You know,
exactly.
Obviously Apple didn't, you know.
Well, you know what? I think a couple of things here. First of all, let's see what they do with One now. Do they expand it to include Now and Then?
No.
Good point. Well, technically it was number one in Britain.
It was. It is. Well, it was. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. I'm just kidding, but
yeah,
you know, at some point they probably will.
Well, they can't because what you have to take a song off.
Oh, because you know, of the
Now and Then's a long song.
Right.
If you want to take off Long and Winding Road because it was only released in America, and plus Paul hates it, or at least that
They're
version.
Not going to do that.
But no. It becomes a two CD set now, you know?
Well, here's
the thing. One song.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing also, and I know that brick and mortar stores are not as prevalent for selling CDs and albums, but more and more vinyl and CDs are coming back. So, especially vinyl. So to me, aesthetically, I know it costs more for the double albums or triple albums now for the red and blue, but aesthetically, if you show a kid or a grandma, we always use the grandma going and buying for their grandson, the Beatles One album or the covers of the red and blue, I'm taking the red and blue because you see the Beatles. You don't just see the number one.
That's
and
interesting.
People want to see that. And I love the fact that you see them 6 years later because people can now choose while they're in Target or Walmart or wherever you're buying your vinyl and CDs.
If you get Beatles One, though, on vinyl, you get the four Richard Avedon photos, and then you get that poster of all the singles.
But that's inside. The aesthetic of the pictures are on the outside of the red and blue.
Yes, I agree. I thought Beatles One was a horrible cover, but it's
30 grown. Million copies later. We're idiots. Like we said at the top.
Right.
Someone was right, and someone of us are wrong. Anyway, so. Let's talk a little bit about the six songs that were remixed. We'll go in order, but excuse me, we will leave the elephant or walrus in the room alone for now, right? Because we have a lot to talk about there. Let's go through the others first, and then we'll talk about I Am the Walrus, because I'm sure everybody has an opinion on that. The others are Fool on the Hill, Magical Mystery Tour, Revolution, Hey Bulldog, and Old Brown Shoe. Most of them, as we know, are from Magical Mystery Tour because that hasn't been remixed yet.
Three out of the six. Yeah, of course.
Right, half of them. Hopefully, we will get a proper box at some point, or an album or vinyl or CD.
If you look at Magical Mystery Tour, though, there's seven total songs on this album. So, you know, there's 11 total on the what started out as the Capitol Edition, now the regular edition. So, most of it's taken care of. So
right, unless you say Strawberry Fields, Penny Lane, and All You Need Is Love are really not Magical Mystery Tour because they're singles, and
right.
All You Need Is Love is right. Off the Old Submarine.
Well, right now, all you're missing, if I'm not mistaken, is Flying Your Mother Should Know and Blue Jay Way.
Well, we could right? be flying. We did that in the Mystery
anyway, but so, yeah. But anyway, so go ahead, Mitch. I'm sorry.
Well, let's talk about Fool on the Hill. The vocals are great. The only thing I didn't love on this is that the triangle is non-existent almost in it. And I love that, you know, the little Fool on the Hill ding, ding. Yeah. It's very low in the mix. And
is the tambourine is way in the background too.
Yes. And, I know I say this a lot in our shows that these songs are ingrained in our brain, but they are, and which is why the Walrus was so stark. But Fool on the Hill, you need that little triangle ting. It's just so prevalent, and I took it out. But other than
it makes it it lends almost a hypnotic feeling to the song. Yeah. That little ding, but it, you know, I don't know. I will go ahead, Mitch. I'm sorry.
I just said I love the vocals. They're very well balanced. I think, you know, you got to. I mean, the beauty of Paul's voice.
His voice
even
is
on the red. I didn't even mention, you know, someone killed me on YouTube because I didn't mention how great Paul's bass playing was on the red. And I was like, because it's a given.
It's almost a given.
Ringo's drumming. Yeah. The Beatles were great musicians. I mean, if something stands out, we'll say it. But I'm saying it right now. The Beatles were freaking great musicians. Bass, guitar, rhythm. I mean,
on this particular track, for me, the Paul's, like, the piano playing on the round and around
yeah.
is I think is brought up nicely into the mix.
Yes.
I think it sounds really sweet within the mix. I feel, and I think this is a positive, I feel that the song has been slightly de-psychedelicized from previous mixes. I feel like there's a little less of the era present in this. I also feel like the bass harmonica, if you're a fan of theirs, the bass harmonica connects you right to the Beach Boys. That bass harmonica that was so prevalent in a lot of Beach Boys songs in that period, Surf's Up, to, you know, is a little later, but, you know, that, you know, Pet Sounds, they use it.
Yeah.
You know, that's Paul's connection to Brian Wilson, I think, on that. And you really hear the bass harmonica in Fool in the Hill. I think that the fact that it is a little less of its time is a nice thing. It takes it a little tiny bit. The new mix, I feel, takes it a little bit out of 1967. Just my personal feeling.
Yeah.
And I do see what you mean. You do miss that triangle. You do miss that, you know, that little mystical feeling in that. Definitely.
Yeah, but I don't think that.
I like the mix.
Psychedelia of it. I think that was just, like you said, the hypnotic part of it.
Yes.
Once you hear something and then you don't.
Yeah.
It's like so stark, and you're like, I need to hear that.
But I can tease you and be like, but that's why it's called a remix.
Yes, but when, you know, that's a whole. We could do a whole show on the word remix.
Yeah.
Because, you know, again, it's a different listening experience, and there are some songs like Fool on the Hill, which are not as classic. I mean, to us, they aren't, but to the outside world, they're not as classic, and they're not going to miss it. But to the Beatle world, we miss it. We notice little things like that. Everybody else will be like, oh, it's such a lovely song. And, you know, and it is a beautiful song.
Yeah.
But I'm almost, you know, in general, I'm almost upset that it was on the Magical Mystery Tour album. And I don't mean it like it shouldn't have been on the album, but I think the Fool on the Hill doesn't get enough recognition because it was involved in that
project.
I'm going to say that in that project, whether you like the project or not.
Do you think that, and I mean, I'm just tossing this out to both of you guys, in general, with 6770 and the new 62-66, do you listen to either of these and see them in any way as being more or less likely to strike a chord with a young person and an upcoming generation than the original mixes were? Do you see these? Because to me, I think with the Red, I think Giles accomplished exactly what he set out to do. He made the Beatles sound like they're 23 years old in 2023.
Right.
Do you think that these new mixes are more or less likely to make a young person say, oh, these guys are interesting?
Well, I think if it depends on how they listen to it. If they're listening with the earbuds, you know, sorry, you're probably not going to notice it as much.
I'm not saying they won't have anything to notice. I'm talking about kids that will be hearing this music for the first time. Would this version be any more, less, or the same inclined to make a young person go, oh, wow, these guys are interesting?
It depends.
I think for the Red, it does.
Parents' music, I guess.
Rob? I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead, Rob.
I'm sorry. No, you go.
Go ahead.
It depends on how they look at their parents' music. You know, if they look at it as, oh, it's my dad's music or my mom's music, you know, then they might not look at it as much. I think... I had no problem with Fool on the Hill. I didn't think it was a big, drastic remix. I thought it was pretty straight ahead. And Tony, I agree with you. There's something about the 67 mix for some reason that maybe because it's on the Magical Mystery Tour and it's such a psychedelic album, and 67 was a psychedelic year for them, that, you know, maybe taking it out of that, maybe you notice that, oh, it's not as psychedelic because it's basically a straight ahead piano song with recorders, you know, who thinks of recorders? So that was my thing. I mean, that's a good question about, you know, how the young, the kiddies will take to, you know, the mix. You know, will the mix help or hurt, their listening experience?
Does Grant, is Granddad going to go out and run to the local used record store to pick up, these are my 62 to 66 and 67, 70, if that's what the kid's going to hear? Or is Granddad or Dad likely to go, oh yeah, man, let's look, these are back out again. Let's get these for my kid, grandkid, fill in the blank.
I think you're starting off there wrong. I think it's not Granddad and Dad anymore. It's kids. And let's start with
the kids. Yeah, go buy it on their own. Yeah, I agree. Yes,
but what I think is, I think it's how I think with the Red, the experience is incredible because it's the young, energetic Beatles who sound even more energetic and fresh. With the Blue, the writing wasn't as good. For most of the tracks, not as, I just think the writing was different. Put it that way, not as good. And I think people always think of the Blue album as the cooler Beatles. So I think, and forgive me for saying it like this, but I think, more people are going to experience the Blue album on some sort of hallucinogenic more than, and I'm being serious,
right,
more than like the Red. They're not, they're not going to sit and drop acid listening to I Saw Her Standing There, but they might because they know all of the songs' reputations.
Are you encouraging young people to take drugs, Mr.
X? I'm not at all. But
no, I know.
No, but I do think the Blue has it. The Blue is outselling the Red right now as of this taping. So, I think it's a weird, it's a good question. I don't think anybody is going to go back to the old ones if you're a young person buying them now. I think the young people are going to buy what's out now because they've heard great things about these albums, because most people are saying both of them sound amazing. So if people go and, young kids go to Target or Walmart, wherever, and they see what's on these albums, they're going to experience it for themselves just like we did whenever we bought them. And so they're fine. I don't think there's going to be any problem about, these are 50 years different than, the other ones sound better. It's that people are going to listen now to the latest incarnation of whatever's out. It'll be
also these, to me at least, these mixes aren't as radical as, let's say, the Love album, where there was a specific goal of doing something different. And I think, to me, this is making it sound, taking these 60-year-old tapes in some instances, or 55, and saying, okay, you know what? The technology has changed enough. Let's make sure we can hear the bottom end now. Let's maybe correct a thing or two along the way.
People are going to listen to in their earbuds, Rob.
Right,
earbuds, and that's what people are hearing.
And if they're streaming it, if they're streaming it and not buying it, that's a whole other thing too. So,
I was going to say, I can't help but feel as though, in our brief interview with Giles, when he talked about those older songs sounding, quote, broken to a young person. And I can't help but feel that this new mix has fixed, quote unquote, a lot of those mixes that may have discouraged a young person from necessarily continuing on with the Beatles and diving in deeper. The drums wholly in one channel and the vocals. And I think that was distracting to a young person, maybe not knowing. I think a lot of young people might have worked backwards. They knew the Beatles were already cool because of Sgt. Pepper or because of, the White Album, and then went back and said, I can accept the drums in one side because it's the frickin' Beatles and I love them. I have a feeling that 62 to 60s, like I was saying the other day to someone, I have to wonder that if this new presentation, like my sister was a 62 to 66 girl. When the Beatles got weird, my sister tuned out. Right. She wasn't interested anymore. I have to wonder whether or not, just like you have a lot of people that, I listen to Elton John, but only up to 75. you know, I listened to Neil Young, but I only took Neil Young up to 77, you know, or 76. Are there going to be people 20 years from now who are going to be going again, just like it was in Gen 1? Are there going to be people going, yeah, man, I really love the Beatles. I'm a 62 to 66 person. I don't really dig the, or I'm a 67, 70 person. I don't really dig that early stuff.
I don't think that's going to change. I think that's always been the case. All right.
Well, do you think it's been as much a case with like our generation, quote unquote?
Yes.
You think so?
Yeah, I do. But what I think in the future, Tony, is like, if people are listening to these, if they buy them in 2023 and they become parents, okay? And again, let's assume these are not going to be out again, because in the 50 years, these have been out, what, 4 or 5 times already?
Yeah.
Between 2014 and whatever it is. But let's assume these are going to be the definitive, quote, you know, 62 to 66 and 67 to 70. Then these will carry on. Nobody is, if people hear the ending of Walrus as this presents it, I think this will become the end of Walrus when the first and second generation die out and the new generation takes over. No, the new generation is not going to go back to the 45. They're not even going to know what a 45 is. So right. They're not going to go back to that. They're not going to go back to the old mixes. They're going to say this album by then is 20, maybe 20 years old to them.
Right.
You know, in 2043, when they're kids this is going to be their Beatles.
There go back. I just think I feel like that these new mixes have made the Red Album more universal. I think that the Blue Album is, and we're talking about the Blue Album in this episode, just to remind folks. I think this has made the Blue, I think this has shown the Blue Album to be a little bit less approachable.
I disagree.
Than the Red Album. It's diverse.
Yes, but I think it's gonna. The Blue Album has always been considered the cooler album.
Of course.
But I still think it's going to be that way, as evidenced by the sales so far up to now.
Well, also the Blue Album is what most radio stations play from. They don't play, especially classic rock. They don't play from the Red as much for whatever reason. I don't know why. We did a show about that once. I'm not sure if these mixes just take over for the young generation. It depends on how deep they get into the Beatles.
Absolutely.
We won't know.
Some people just have the Red and the Blue. That's it. I got everything. This one, the Blue Album, I think adds a couple of shadings to the Beatles, which wasn't there before.
Agreed.
And I think that, because it's on CD, maybe they should have done this when they first did this in 93, and then they did it again in, 2010 or whatever it was. Maybe they should have done it then, but they didn't because they weren't remixing and stuff like that.
But they didn't have the technology to do anything.
Right. So, the technology and the music have sort of caught up with each other. And I think that's where the difference is, because, they've never really done anything like this where they added this many songs onto the CDs without increasing another CD. Instead of making the 2 CDs, they could have made it 3 very, very easily.
But
they chose not to, because then it becomes, do you give that CD, that third CD away for free, or do you just not care because everyone's streaming anyway? And then, and then you don't even need the physical thing.
Right.
If CD. Now and Then wasn't released, we either would not have had this anniversary release, or it would have been an anniversary release of just the original song list.
From what I read, they planned on doing something with the Red and the Blue, and then Now and Then happened, and then they said, okay, we got to do something. Where do we? Now and Then is the weird song on this whole album, because
it's the outlier.
Someone said on our page on Facebook, someone said, well, maybe they should have put it like it as a 45 extra, like they did with McCartney 2. And I said, I didn't respond, but I was going to no, this has to be part of the actual physical. You don't just have it as a single thing in there. You have to attach it. If you want to do it as a separate thing and still have it on the record, yeah. But, you just can't copy, something else that happened with McCartney too. There's a reason why Coming Up was like that.
I do see it though. I do see it as a possibility. You could have just put out the two album set all over again, not added the bonus tracks and attached a single of 45 of Now and Then.
Well,
because you know what that would have done too? That would have meant more sales for the 45. Would have been like giving away this CD of the new Prince album at the concert.
But would it have? You know why?
No, but it'd be, you put the single in, and then also too, you could have
Now and Then was sold separately in different colors and everything, and it sold a zillion. So
right, but you put a unique, you put yet another unique version in with the Blue album.
But I think they had to, I'm sorry, Mitch, you go first.
Okay, no, I was about to say though, they did put a unique version. They put it as an added track
on another album. Yeah.
Yes, but. It's a stroke of brilliance because Now and Then was put out November 2nd, right? And by the time they released these on November 10th, Now and Then was still being talked about, but a little less because now the Red and the Blue are coming out with expanded versions. So this was the talking point, these albums, right? So by having Now and Then and the Blue, which was now the talking point, it's almost as if Now and Then is saying, I was released, I'm still here, you know, I'm still new, still here, because you're hearing it at the end of the Blue, which let's continue if we can on the Blue.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
So anyway, let's talk about Magical Mystery Tour. I'm going to give my opinion. You know what, Rob, give your opinion first.
I like the mix on this a lot, actually. You know, I, the only thing I wish they had done with the mix, there's a great piano piece at the end that fades out. But yeah, if you listen to the fade out, it actually ends cold. And I wish that was raised up. If you, like I said, with the Red album, I'll say with this album, one thing they could have done, since this isn't the hits per se, they could have changed some of the way things fade out, or like they did with Dear Prudence, which we'll get to later. But they could have raised that bit at the end, especially if you're remixing it, you know, and have it end this. It ends with a weird note at the end, but it's so faded down you don't hear it on this version as much as you do on the other versions. I liked most of the feel. You know, I noticed John's backing vocals tremendously on Magical Mystery Tour, which it's always was a little bit under Paul's vocals. This is equal, at least to me. So I was impressed with Magical Mystery Tour as a remix, and of course, you know. Yeah, you know, it was remixed once before in 1988. A home video got remixed, so you know
that's, yeah, not many people had access to that.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, the remixing is it can be a habit for the Beatles. You know, seemed that way sometimes.
Tony,
it's one of my favorites. Just on the whole Blue album now. That previously missing or that buried rhythm guitar part, damn, that's amazing. I love that. That crunchy little Chuck Berry, that little thing going on. You could feel Ringo kick it in during the second verse. Once the second verse hits, it's all about Ringo. This was never one of my favorite Beatles songs. Never. And this mix just jumped it up in status. I really, really love this. It's weird though, the cut before the Magical Mystery Tour is coming to take you away. That's got to be a tape edit because it's a little more dramatic. But and I love the ending. I feel like the ending is a lot. But I know what you're saying, Rob, but it should have been louder, and that's probably true. But the ending is more definitive than the original version was, I thought. So,
For me, I think it sounds fantastic. The only thing is for me, the beginning yell of roll up is a little lower, but I liked it loud because it's announcing the song, so to speak. The blaring horns right from the beginning are just, I love it. And there's also the little guitar. We haven't really heard like
that's true. Yeah.
The electric
rhythm guitar. Yeah.
It's just, wow. It's, I think it's a wonderful remix in general. To me, it is, as you said, Tony, it's one of the highlights. I've always loved this song. I don't know why, but it's always been just, you know why? Because it's a great album opener.
It is a great album opener, yeah.
I mean, even a great EP opener for all you UK and rest of the world. But it's such a great opening track that it did. That's why it always struck me And it's even great in the project, in the film, because that's the first thing you hear. But for here, it's always just like a slap you in the face, you know, here you go. To me, it's very energetic, and it only makes it more energetic with the remix. So,
okay.
Anyway, Revolution. I'm going to start this one, if you don't mind. You know, a lot of people are saying, oh, John said it would probably sound like Ice Cream. I don't agree with the Ice Cream, but nothing for me so far, even this, tops the Mono UK45. It just doesn't do it. I still think this sounds good. It sounds a little muddy to me. It sounds good. I don't think the guitar solo is as loud. But listen, Revolution to me has always been one of my favorite Beatles songs. This didn't have the punch I wanted. That's all.
I think personally that this is the best stereo mix we've ever heard. Because okay. The other stereo mix was too wide. In the sense it's one channel here, one channel here. So to me, I actually went back and listened to this twice when I was listening to it, because I almost thought it was mono, because everything is kind of centered. And except for the guitar, you know, the opening guitar is to the left or the right, whichever way it is, how your setup is. So to me, I was very impressed with the fact that, you know, I thought of the same thing when John said it, but he didn't like that, especially Revolution, the Red, the Blue came out. I mean, the Blue album came out, that mix. But you know, that's the way it was probably on, you know, the Hey Jude album. Maybe he didn't pay attention to it. So to me, I was very impressed with how the fact that they centered most of it, not all of it, because you know, Nicky Hopkins gets piano. To me, it was a little lower in the mix, but not as much as I've heard some other people say.
Yeah,
I agree with you that I felt Nicky Hopkins was a little bit too far down in the mix. I sort of felt the opposite in a way, Rob. I felt like the guitars could definitely have been split a bit more. I just felt everything was a little bit bunched up still. I like that the drums are more split, but I just felt like it didn't have the dynamics that it could have. I know that the whole John saying, well, the stereo is like a bit of Ice Cream. I listened to it on a big system, and it sounded great. But at home, for some reason, not so much. I feel like John's rhythm guitar is drowning out some of the other stuff. I like that Giles put the lead guitar after like that little interjection after You Ain't Gonna Make It With Anyone Anyhow is hard left. I appreciate that. But I felt like overall it's a little muddy. It is probably, you know, and don't get me wrong, it's again, you're probably right. It may be the best stereo mix we have, but I'm shaking my head that I'm not. I'm seeing the video and I'm seeing a band in front of me.
Yeah, okay.
And if I'm not going to hear it in mono, in blessed mono, then I want to hear Paul and George on my left and John on my right. I want to hear what I'm seeing in that video. If I'm sitting in the room and I'm sitting staring at the band, John's going to be louder in my left ear, Paul and George are going to be louder on my right. So I was a little disappointed that this wasn't a split, a 7-10 split. I felt like if you'd have done that and you'd smacked it at me and the when and it came at me in dead center and then maybe quietly slid over a little more to one side, you would have punched me in the face. So again, I'm not saying that this is bad, but it disappointed me because I wanted to be fed something a little more like I was having a live experience.
Well, let's say they'd gone to the video, the promotional film as officially is known as. What happens if they put that version in there instead of the version, you know, that's there now? I mean, I'm so used to the promotional film version now because that's one I like to play on my show. And
I know you don't hear the Shooby Doo Ops, it confuses. Right.
Yeah. So what happens if they had chosen that version instead of the, you know, the B-side to Hey Jude.
Well, that version is a mess because you've got a lot of leakage.
That's true, but that's what the
I don't think the MAL software could. I think you would have blown the head off the MAL software. There's too much duplication. There's like too much, you know, there's double of everything.
Right, because you're right, because they're singing over a partial recorded track. Yeah. So, but it, you know, it's something that would have been interesting is, you know, they're not going to go crazy with some of the choices they made.
You could have added.
You don't expect it. But, you know, it would have been nice if they could fly them in or something.
They could have flown in the Shoo-Bee-Doo-Wops. That would have been interesting. But anyway.
But then you would have said you're doing the love thing, you know, because you're making
friends. I know.
I like love.
I would have taken that.
Okay. Anyway, so the next song is probably the one where it's the had to be on this compilation because it's been played on the Beatles channel so much. It's become such a an incredible song in Beatles lore, Hey Bulldog. And to me, I think this version is as close to perfection mixing wise as you can get.
Yep.
That's just me.
I will disagree, but continue.
X gets the square.
No, I swear to God, I was just about to say circle gets the square. That's really funny. Wow, and a bunch of kids just went, what the hell are they talking
about? I'm not going to be Charlie Weaver again.
Okay? Oh, sorry.
Go ahead, Rob. Why do you disagree?
I was it me, or is there a weird echo on the drums?
It's just you.
It's you.
I'm listening to it.
Are you talking about the addition of that like thunder crash that we used to read years and years ago, and every little thing was a weird noise that is in some versions of Hey Bulldog. Are you talking about during the You Can Talk to Me?
I don't know. I didn't write that part down. I just wrote that I thought there was a weird echo on the drums that I didn't notice in the song track version. And the version that's on the Yellow Submarine regular album is just a horrible mix because
it's a nightmare.
It's all over the place.
It's very muddy. I always thought.
Yeah.
So that would be my problem. I also wrote, I thought the piano, there's eighth note pianos going on all through that song, which I never really noticed.
Yeah.
That part I liked. And but then at the end, I thought the music slightly got lower. You know, just I wasn't thrilled with this. You know, I know this song has a weird history because, you know, John brought it in, says, hey, instead of doing this, you know, let's play a new song to the video we're going to make for Lady Madonna. And it actually probably was the best song recorded during that week before they went hang out with the Maharishi. So, you know, it was on the Sirius channels all over the place. They said the computers broke. That's not true. But I don't know. I wasn't thrilled with this stereo mix as much as previous ones. It fits the album though, and that's I think maybe important too. You know, from the differences in what's going on in the album. So
interesting.
It fits the album.
It fits the suit.
If you take it as a standalone, it's a little different. If you do it, I didn't do an AB on this, but if you do an AB, it's going to sound different.
Hmm.
More than you maybe want.
I did love the song track version, but I love this one even more. Paul's bass work is freaking amazing. I love that you can hear during that. You can talk. I love the. I love that. That whatever that the hell that was that was buried in the background. That was the. I think that was the noise that some people heard in some, you know, in the Mexican EP. I don't know. There's like chatter at the end of the guitar solo.
Yeah.
And I love that Paul's bass is as prominent as it is during the guitar solo. I come back. This song has become for me one of the Beatles' coolest songs. There's also now like another line before the, what do you say? You know, I say, woof, before that, there's like another line of chatter in the background that we
heard
and stuff. You can't hear some of the chatter as well as the song track version. You can't hear the whole, you know, I want to have grandchildren or whatever he says there. but
that part's lower in this version.
Is lower in this version. Yeah. I mean, you get the you know, but overall, I don't know. It's probably partly because it's one of my favorite Beatles songs, but I love the new stereo mix.
All right. So the next two songs.
Well, Mitch, what do you think of Hey Bulldog?
I thought it was as close to perfection mixed.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And the next two songs, we're going to have to discuss because it's Old Brown Shoe and I Am the Walrus. Let's talk about Old Brown Shoe first. Tony, you start off with this one.
I'll love it.
You do?
Yeah, I'll love it.
Okay.
Right. I think it's my favorite of all the remixes. Paul's bass work again is just ludicrous. What's with the bark during the first chorus? Somebody barks in the background. The screaming during the guitar solo. I mean, I'm not going to steal your thunder, but you, Mitch, you were saying we were talking days ago. You're saying it's a party. I mean, it elevated this song for me, like Magical Mystery Tour. There's like another groan during the For Your Sweet Top Lip. I'm in the queue. The only thing I can complain about is the closing harmony. The lines are down a little too low. The harmony lines are down a little lower than they should be, I think. But, you know, George's vocal is not as in your face. I'm totally okay with that. I just think musically this song smokes. So
okay, Rob.
And it was only a B-side. You know, that's the sad part about it.
Yeah.
I agree with you, Tony. I think it's one of the best mixes on the album also. I think one of the things I noticed a lot is the bass line, which it's been said that George might have did some of it, but it's such a powerful bass line for this song. And on this mix, you notice it. As much as heard in the original mix, you notice it even more, and you appreciate it even more, that this bass line is a song in itself.
Yep.
Now, it's just, you listen, damn, that's good. That's good. So,
but didn't also George play the bass on this?
What's that?
Didn't George play the bass?
It's been said that he did, but.
Well, George actually said, there's an interview that said something to the effect, I'm paraphrasing, but someone said, hey, Old Brown Shoe, isn't that Paul going nuts again? And no, George says, Old Brown Shoe, it's a bass player acting like a freaking lunatic. And the interviewer says, oh, is that Paul going nuts again? And George says, no, that's me going nuts again.
It's the weird part is, maybe George should have been the bass player at one point. I mean, it's incredible that this bass line is George Harrison, because it doesn't sound like a George Harrison bass line.
There is serious conflict in terms of the personnel on this song.
Yeah, we remember
there's
when
conflicting reports all over the place.
Yeah, remember supposedly Ringo wasn't on it.
Right, Paul is on drums.
Yeah.
Doesn't sound like Paul's drums.
No, it doesn't.
I don't think it does either, especially the fill going into the ending.
Yeah. So.
And then basically it says, you know, a lot of these different things is reporting that it's George playing bass. And I, you know,
there's that interview where George says it's me.
I've heard that too, but either way, it's a fantastic bass. I love the guitar solo where one ends and the next one starts. It's a lot more noticeable on this, and on purpose, I think, to notice that there's two separate guitars happening here, and it's a great song to begin with, and it's one of my favorite mixes on this whole thing. I think this is the type of song that jumps out to a new listener and say, why do I know this song? You know, it's same with Hey Bulldog. These are the two songs that, if you're looking for the kids, these two songs jump out at you as rock songs. If you're looking for that as a child, or you know, a child to us is, you know, 40, yeah, but
right.
You know what I mean. So you know, I think these two, Old Brown Shoe is just fantastic. I love everything about the song. I love everything that we can now hear in this song.
So I'm going to ask you an Old Brown Shoe trivia question.
Ooh.
No, not a real, but I'm just saying, your ears, what are they saying at the end?
At the end?
At the end.
That part?
Yeah.
I don't know. I never cared.
I've always sung it and thought of it as for whatever reason, I don't know if it's relevant to lyrics, but I've always heard it as through it all, through and through.
But you know, when George did it in concert, through and through.
What's that?
When George did it in concert in Japan.
Yeah.
And the background singers did not. It's like, what did they sing? Do that gong or what? I forgot what they said.
Do that do or something like that.
Something like that. I forgot what it was, but it wasn't.
Very Grateful Dead. Anyway.
Yeah. I don't know. I've never thought about it. I just say, do that, you know.
Okay. Anyway.
I'm going to have to disagree with both of you on this one.
Well, you're wrong. Sorry.
I was very disappointed. I do love the party aspect of it, when they have a lot of the whooping and, you know, all over. But to me, George's vocal, like you mentioned it, it's not as in your face, but I think it's too far back. It almost sounds like he was, you know, recording it in the back of the room, and he sounds more like a little old lady in the shoe rather than. I think Giles should have done a long treatment with the vocal, and brought it much more up in the mix, because he brought up the vocal in long.
I think
he should have done that with this. The guitar solo to me seems a bit lower in the mix. I didn't love that.
I do agree that some of the things are, quote, lower. I just feel like because the mixes are so much more well-rounded, I feel like it matters less.
That's fine. But also at around 40 seconds, there's a little drop in like the fader or something. And I'm like, what happened here?
Interesting.
I don't know if anybody missed it or not, but I heard it. Also, I'm going to nitpick here.
Uh-oh.
I have to. And again, this is a nitpick, people. So I'm not. This is not anything major, but the lyric sheet's wrong.
The lyric sheet
says, "Help me escape from this zoo."
That's funny.
And you know what? I've always known it as got me escaping from the zoo.
Yeah.
So if you're going to make these remixed and fresh, you really need to look at the lyric sheet again.
Now, there are other mistakes in the lyric sheets too, though.
Yes, I know. But you know what? You got to change.
I don't know. I like my mistakes in the lyric sheets. They make me warm and fuzzy. They're the same
mistakes. I didn't notice that, but you know, sometimes maybe he wrote it that way, but then sang it differently.
Publishing. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't know. And again, that's a very small nitpick. So don't, Mitch is an idiot. I can't believe he picked that up. I'm sorry, but I just happened to be staring at the lyrics while singing this song, while listening to it. And I'm like, no, that's not Help Me Escape from the Zoo. Anyway, now we have to address the elephant walrus in the room. I Am the Walrus. To me, this is the definite WTF of the whole album. We noticed it in the listening event. It's even more noticeable when you have the album. I thought it might get better, and it didn't. Rob, I'm going to let you start, and then Tony, and then I guess I'll end.
When we first heard it, I was a little disappointed at the ending because, you know, just it was a weird thing. But I think part of it, when I was listening to it the other night, is that maybe there's like a fade in with the BBC stuff, and maybe it was done on purpose to show that the BBC has bad reception problems or something, because it sort of sounds like there's static in there. Like they actually took it from an air check instead of the actual production tape. And we do know that they did that for the Love soundtrack, that they actually found the production tape and then they mixed it in. And they put that at the end of the song, which sort of made sense for the Love soundtrack. I changed my mind a little bit since we first heard it. I don't mind it as much. It's a weird ending. It's not what we know and love, but I wasn't offended by it the way I sort of was the first time I heard it.
Bingo.
You know, it's nice to see something different on these type of albums too, because if it's just the same mix, but you know, the stereo's wider or something, or, you know, then it just becomes the same thing. So for me to have it like this, you know what? You know, they should have put that two bar thing in the middle that's on the 45, the American 45, in this mix. That would have been a lot more fun too.
And tacked on the horn ending from Penny Lane just for fun. I'm kidding.
Yes, yes. And that would be something. If you're already doing this on I Am the Walrus, it would be nice to have those two bars in the middle there. Because the first time I heard that on the Rarities album, I was like, what the hell's John writing? But it's the way John wrote. He threw 2/4 time signatures in places that didn't belong there, except it's a John Lennon song, and it does belong there.
Right.
So to me, I wasn't offended by the ending as much as some friends of mine have been that I've talked to. And everyone has talked about this song out of everything about these albums. This is the song and the version and the mix that people say, and I've seen it's both sides.
Most drastic, Rob. It is.
The most, yeah, this is the most drastic mix. Talk.
Yeah.
So I was happy with it. It's different. Do I wish it's I different. Heard more of King Lear? Yeah, because it kind of fades in and out more than it does on the version we know and love.
I need the rest your grandfather, rest you at the end.
Yes, I agree with and that.
It's there. It's very, very quiet.
Yeah. Tony, what about you?
Yeah, you know, a lot of what Rob said is where I'm going. I'm going to go really out there and go conspiracy theory on this. No, seriously. It really disappointed me when we first heard it. If you remember, the funny thing was, here we are, a bunch of press, you know, all a bunch of press people. We're listening to it at the event, and it finished. And somebody in front of us, I can't remember who it was, went, okay. Just like that. Like, it in with the room for the people from Apple, you know. Did it throw me for a loop? Yeah. Did I think the stereo mix was going to be different than the Atmos mix? Yeah. Now that I've had the chance to hear it, like Rob, am I happy to just have an alternative? Do I look at this and kind of go, if I'd gotten this on Anthology as an extra track, I would have been like, fun. Now, here's the conspiracy theory part. The whole idea of them stumbling upon that radio broadcast in the studio and yada, yada. Do we know 100,000% that really was the absolute truth? There's only a handful of people who were in the room.
Right.
Could they have stumbled on that broadcast, taken a couple of other weird radio things, put them all onto another tape, and then played around with them and mixed them down to one track to put them onto Magical Mystery Tour? Mark, if you're listening, Mark Lewis may be having an aneurysm right now because he knows the truth, and that really was, you know, they really did do it live. But this could possibly been the kind of thing, like, if you remember, when we interviewed Giles, we left a question out. We asked about this, and Giles seemed just a little bit thrown off by our question. But one of the things that he said, and I'm sure we're okay with doing this, but Giles had said, well, it was, I just felt like it was closer to what they wanted or what they intended. If you listen to the end of the new mix of I Am the Walrus, it becomes audio verite. It becomes music concrete. It becomes the next step toward Revolution number 9. It gets weirded out. It gets this fuzz, this radio play, this all this weirdness. Yeah. And the Beatles essentially disappear. But people keep saying, where the hell did they get this brand new thing that's being flown in? Is it really a brand new thing that's being flown in? Could that piece at the end have existed on another track? And Giles just went, oh, hello. What's that? And flew that in?
I would think so.
Right.
That could be. He didn't say, but that could be. Right.
So there, look what happened with Here Comes the Sun.
There's a guitar solo that we never knew about.
Bingo.
And that should have been on Abbey Road, but it wasn't.
Or this,
right.
But so my question is,
very good. Yeah.
You know, As you said, are you disappointed not hear a lot of King Lear? Are you disappointed not hear, you know, some of the things you're familiar with? Is it weird that the Beatles all but disappear for a few seconds, more than a few seconds towards the end? But did you just get some new strange variation that, in truth, I think creates another Beatle WTF in the sense of, I'm not sure if we're ever going to really know what Giles found on that. And Giles, if you we love you, and we know that, you know, whatever you did, you know, I thought it was a creative thing to do. Sure. But if there's something that he did, that there was something on that tape that we didn't know about, then that I think makes it more fun, actually.
See, for me, it's a totally different lift. First of all, the mix up until the end is spectacular. I love
absolutely.
It. I love it. And we have to say that, because by everybody talking about this and mentioning the end, nobody's
belittling the mix. Beginning. Yeah.
Right. So it's like, wait, did you like it though until the end? And I loved it until the end, because it, again, it's so different. It's almost like a love track. But for me, like, there's a definite audio dropout at about 2 minutes. Definite. And I was like, what's going on here? How could people let that go through? Like, Giles and Sam are audio people.
Right, but maybe they can't fix it. You know, they can't
fix anything.
Yeah, but dropouts on a physical tape, you know.
It's a fade. It's not there on any other one. It's this. Okay. And maybe it's a mistake. I don't know.
Maybe just the acid kicked in, Mitch. Maybe you're just, I'm sorry.
But, you know, listen, Giles has told us many times as a Beatle fan, he's useless. He said it twice on our 14 minutes.
Right.
So
I think he's personally being humble on that. He gets a lot of crap online from different sites, and I won't mention where they're from, and you know where they are.
Yeah,
I think he's just trying to set himself up as, I'm this humble guy and I'm doing this job, and you know, he knows some things. Come on.
He does know some things, but he always says
he's heard the tapes.
He knows some things. He knows Paul McCartney's phone number, which we don't. Anyway,
yeah.
Well, so does George. He gave it out.
Nice.
Miss Odell.
Austin 6922.
We all know it. Well, we knew what it was. But see, Rob, he does know things, but he always says, I'm not a Beatle expert like you guys.
Right.
Right. And when I say you guys, I mean all of our listeners and Beatle experts, so to speak, who really, really audiophiles, who really go crazy with just the Beatles. So Giles is not really hearing what we're hearing, so to speak. So I think when this was finished, someone in the room or outside of the room who heard the finished product had to have said something like, this is so drastic. I'm not sure.
I really didn't notice the dropout as much.
No, not even the dropout. Yeah. I'm talking at the end.
Oh, yeah.
The dropout is not, you know, the dropout is definitely there.
But here's my thought. How did you get Paul and Sean and Olivia and Ringo to sign off on it?
Because I don't think they know their own songs that well, where they're going to sit.
Yeah, but they would hear that though.
They also are not Beatle historians, where they played on the records. But, you know, once it gets to that very end of all that stuff, you know, I don't even know if they were still listening. You know, it might have been like, oh, that was great. And then that's it.
I'm not sure, but Olivia's
going to sit there and say, I don't hear everybody's got one enough, or, you know, she's not going to know all that. And I don't even think Ringo and Paul would really notice all of that. Maybe Sean.
I think Sean would have.
Yes, exactly. Sean would have.
Sean's a fan.
Yes, he is. And he's done great work with his dad's estate. Right. So I'm not, you know, I just don't know. I mean, maybe they all said, yes, it's totally different, and we hear it's different, but like Tony said, it's a new experience. Go for it.
I mean, is it going to be my go-to for Magical Mystery Tour? No, probably not. Am I going to skip it when it comes on this record?
Oh,
No, I'm not. And again, like, you know, folks, we like we're talking about, yeah, you know, we've thankfully we have a very nice relationship with Giles. We talk about this stuff very honestly, though. If there's stuff that we don't like that he's done or worked on, we'll say we don't love this. We don't, you know.
Told us once we're wrong. But,
what's that?
He told what's us, that? I think, once we're yeah. you're wrong.
Yeah, yes, you're wrong. He did. Yeah, he that did. Was kind of funny. But
yes, he was.
But you know, it for in a lot of this stuff, I'm looking at it for what it is. It's the alternative. You start making all the albums unavailable and these become the only versions. Yeah, maybe I get pissy, but you know what? For now, these are alternatives.
Yeah, okay. That's the best way to look at it. If you go on Spotify, it says the year, the mix year. Yep. On. So yeah. you can probably find somewhere, you know, the 1987, you know, reissue somewhere.
You want to do a digital version, go on one of your streaming services, bring up the 2023 and replace I Am the Walrus with a different version.
Yeah, yeah. Or the love version or whatever. I'm glad this actually happened because I at least wanted, because this isn't the greatest hits album. This right. is a career spanning album, and that's different. So if there's something that they added that maybe was there or a variation of it, I'm happy about that very much.
Okay.
You know? So, all right. Well, you know what? There's differing opinions out there on I Am the Walrus. And, you know,
there's differing opinions in this room.
Like I said, mine changed from the first time I heard it.
Mine too, I think. Yeah.
That's
okay.
Yeah.
It's okay. I mean, we can agree to
this. Yeah.
All right. So, like the old Beatles.
Rob, we're not doing the show with Mitch anymore, right? We're going to talk later.
I don't know. Mitch is a good guy, Tony. I think we should keep him around.
Yeah, without Mitch, three people would hear us.
No. But wait, so you guys are going to do the two of us podcast, and I'm going to do the Beatles one.
Oh, very good.
You're called Tom Ignatti.
Tom, you want to join up? Then it would be Beatles two.
Right, that would
I'm
work.
Saying by myself, and no one would okay. except me because right. no one wants to hear with me anyway. And just like the Beatle cartoons, they said, now we come to the part of the show where, yeah, mm-hmm. but now we do come to the part of the show where this is going to be interesting because the last in the red, we said, these are the additional songs, and should they have all been on, what the hell? Should we replace them with some? So let's go around the room, not take a long time because there's not as many that I think we can replace, but. Tell your list of songs that you don't have to take off right now. But if you want to mention one that you think is just a what WTF moment, that's fine. So, Rob, did you come up with songs that should have been the additionals instead of maybe what some of the nine were? Eight were, because Now and Then is staying.
No matter right. I wasn't thrilled that Blackbird was on here. I personally think, you know, it's kind of been it was sort of a solo song. Now, mind you, Within You, Without You is on here, and that's basically a George solo song.
Yep.
But it also sort of doesn't fit in the way the album flows. And there is a certain flow to this album, and that's one of the reasons why I've always liked it.
It's not this album's Yesterday?
Bingo.
But Yesterday was the last song on the side.
I'm not worried about where it fit. I'm just saying.
Or Eleanor Rigby, or, you know, I mean, any solo.
Well, it's a little quieter, you know.
No, well, Eleanor Rigby fits better than, it's more of a rocking song to me. But to me, Blackbird does not belong on this album. Glass Onion does not belong on this album at all. Even though I like the backing track tremendously,
but we don't have to talk about the, because we already talked about the mix when we did the White Album show.
Right. But what I'm saying is Glass Onion doesn't belong on this album. I Want You, She's So Heavy does. I think I think that's fantastic. Why? Because if you're just coming into the Beatles and you hear this album, this song, it's a heavy, heavy song. And then the way it ends.
Okay.
And to me, says a lot about the Beatles, the way Tomorrow Never Knows fits in now on the Red album. You know, it gives a little more insight to the Beatles, which they didn't do really on the original mix.
What you just said, put the song into context, because you just said the way Tomorrow Never Knows. Yes. That was really good.
Excellent. And I think instead of having Blackbird, what's a great introduction type song to the Beatles, and that's Happiness is a Warm Gun.
But there's a drug reference.
Yeah, so what?
Look at the rest. Look at it in context. Yeah, but look at it in context, though, Rob, with the rest of with the other stuff on that record and what it's trying to represent.
I'm not worried about drug references or anything.
All right.
Well, you know, Tony,
Happiness is a Warm Gun could be a sex reference, which John actually said it was.
Oh, and that works. No, I'm kidding.
That works much better, right? Fine. Yeah.
For me, okay. The four that go, no argument. They're out of here. I'm Your Mind, Glass Onion, Oh, Darling, I Want You. Out, gone.
Bye-bye.
I'm Your Mind. What was this? The only George song left from that whole period?
No.
What about Piggies?
Nah.
What about Piggies? Don't say now. I mean, Piggies, all right, it has a horrible reputation because it was involved with the whole Manson thing. Went back to it in 91 for his Japan tour. It's a little bit of, it's more social commentary, just like Taxman. I understand I Mean Mine was a title of George's biography. I understand it was a reference to Paul. I understand it was the last song that any, more than one Beatle was in the room working on. I get that.
Not really. Let It Be had a couple. Oh, no, that was just Ringo on doing drums.
So I get it. But in my opinion, I Mean Mine is not the strongest. I think Piggies is a cooler arrangement. I think Savoy it's just Truffle. A neat tune. Savoy Truffle's another possibility.
It's all
truthfully, even the new mix of Long, Long, Long.
It's all too much.
Oh my God, it's all too much. Oh wait, that's right. You and I were talking about this. What about Only a Northern Song or It's All Too Much?
Out of those two, I would pick It's All Too Much because it's more iconic. Yeah.
It's all too much. I mean,
movie and,
but, and if you were to pick that song, you'd want, this is the place to place the 8-minute version in.
Bingo.
This is the place. Correct. This is the type of thing where it says, okay, this is something different that for the people who've bought every edition of this and going to buy this again, because that's what you do.
Right.
You know, that would be perfect of the 8-minute version of.
I love it. All right. So that takes up the time that I Want You would have taken up. So that's good.
Yes, it does.
Glass Onion, right out. It's an album track. There's no super unique quality. For God's sake, where's Julia? Where's Julia?
That's a good choice, too. Wow.
Where the hell is Julia? That just bugs me. Oh, Darling. Question mark for me. Okay, it's Paul. Okay, it's a great vocal. I know all you people who heard me talk about Paul's vocals that, you know, you're going to go on about why don't I love the vocal on Oh Darling. I do love it. It's Paul impersonating. It's great. It's Paul doing a blues tune. You Never Give Me Your Money was everything that Paul McCartney was going to do moving forward. The sweet aspect to it, S-U-I-T-E aspect to it. That's everything that indicated where Paul was going to go down the road.
That's true.
So to me, You Never Give Me Your Money. That's the perfect. And talk about a song about the Beatles. Oh, my God. I Want You. Hear Me Out. Here's where we get weird, folks. Here's where everything just goes right. Totally insane. Tony loses his mind.
Uh-oh.
How about this? We screw with the Abbey Road medley. How about instead of I Want You, we get Mean Mr. Mustard, Polythene Pam, and She Came In Through the Bathroom Window. Bang, bang, bang.
I don't want Silver Hammer.
Yeah, right. No, but seriously.
I don't like it.
Pull them out of the medley. It'd be the first time that ever happened. They have a cold start and a cold finish. And right in the middle of another album, you get a piece of the Abbey Road medley. And you just put those three songs. And on the top, you wrote segment from Abbey Road medley or something like that.
That's not a bad idea, because it's also something different to the people who are going to be entering the Beatle world.
Yeah.
And they'd say, oh, that's interesting. Three songs out of 3 minutes.
Yep.
All right. So here's mine. And take out whatever you want. I still think maybe Ringo should have had Good Night.
Yeah.
Because Ringo, he only has one song on this, Octopus's Garden. All right. I think Because should have been on this for the same reason as This Boy is on the Red, the 3-part harmony.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
I definitely think One After 909 and I've Got a Feeling should have been on this, especially piggybacking on the Get Back. I've Got a Feeling was played 75,000 times during those 8 hours that we heard the Get Back movie.
Right.
And then again on the roof. Right. I think that should have been on there. And you know what? If you don't want to do that, if you don't want to put I've Got a Feeling or One After 909, because One After 909 is one of the best group songs. I mean, everything works on that. The drumming, the we've said it. George's solo is just amazing. Listen,
can I recommend something though? Again, yeah. Here's what you could have done to really mess with people. Could have put the first one on 62 to 66,
and then this
and
one.
Put the closing one on 67.
And you want to know something? For the people who didn't buy both, people would shit.
Yeah.
On the first
oh, that,
one,
that's like, actually a good idea, but then all of a sudden we're rebuilding this entire beast.
Of course.
But that's what we do around here.
That's what we do. If you don't want to put those and you want to have a beautiful song, you put two of us on there.
Yeah.
Get rid of Long and Winding Road then, because
you can't get rid of the stuff already on the compilation that was.
Oh, yes, you can.
No, you can't.
We've already added One After 909 to the Red album. Come on.
Oh, he's adding drug songs. He can do whatever he wants. This is what he wants to play at his party. Anyway.
You know what? The only reason, and we've talked about this, the only reason I could think of that I want You See She's So Heavy is on here is because it's the last song that all four were in the studio for.
Yeah, yeah.
That's maybe that was their thinking, or maybe as Rob said, maybe they just did it because it's a really cool song, but I don't think it fits on here. Now, I'm just taking 1 minute, and then we're going to wrap up. Because
I got a couple more things.
Go ahead, Rob.
I was going to just say, now and then, right after Long and Winding Road, I think fits beautifully. I'm sorry, I do. I think it just works well.
Yeah, I am just that was one of the things I was going to bring up.
Okay, good.
Personally, I think Now and Then, the end is anticlimactic almost.
Oh,
I
think CDs, by the way, of the CDs.
Of the CDs.
Right. Yes.
It opens album three of the Blue Album.
Which
vinyl.
Is so freaking weird. Why would you open an album? I know that.
Because you can't close with it.
I'll tell you why. Because they did it. First of all, it was supposed to be on, that song was supposed to be on Anthology 3. It would have been the lead-off track on that.
Okay.
So to have it as the closing track on 67 to 70, it should have been the opening act, and then it sort of sets you up for the rest of it. You know, it's especially it's a song about looking back and, you know, and love and remembering things. To me, if you have it at the beginning, it'd be just like the anthology. Personally, I wish they had done an anthology for it, included this in there, but they're not there yet, so I understand why. But to me, I would have had Now and Then at the beginning, and then it goes into Strawberry Fields. So
what was your other point?
Oh, I have a couple of things. First of all, I'm glad that they kept the cleaned up version of While My Guitar Gently Weeps, which is the actual recording and not taken off the album master. I'm glad that Dear Prudence now has a clean open, which they never had before, at least the official version of the officially released version, because the only place you found that clean open was on the Rock Band mix.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember when the White Album came out and we got to talk to Giles, and one thing I asked him, I said, well, why didn't you have a clean open of Dear Prudence? He goes, well, he gave us an answer, and I said, well, on the Rock Band you did it, and he goes, and he looked at me like, yeah, but that was a game, that was a video game. So I'm glad that this has happened, so because I happen to like that song a lot. Also, Day in the Life kept the clean open, which, you know, if you remember on the original album, it was fade in with the crowd. And I wish they had done that with A Little Help From My Friends, with a clean open, without, I know those two songs are signed, you know, kind of together for life.
Yeah.
But I would have liked to have had a clean open of With a Little Help From My Friends, because, you know, it's, you know, people forget that there's actually chords before, you know, Ringo starts to sing. You know, if you go to the Rock Band, it's kind of there. So that would be my only other thing. And let me see what other notes.
Rob, just to jog your memory, you said something in the beginning. You said off mic, you said you had something brilliant to say.
Well, that was the thing. Now and Then should be the lead-off track of the 67 to 70. I forgot it was on the third LP.
Yes.
You know, right. So that, you know, at least they were, I didn't realize that, but it's a good lead-off song, too. You know, it's waiting at the end for the, it's like, come on, let's get to that song. And to me, you know, I happen to love, the song's been out about a month now. I love this song. I really enjoy this song. And the more I read about it and how it came together and the video and the 12-minute piece, I love this song. I really do. I think it's...
See, Rob, I have to disagree about, I love it as the end because The Long and Winding Road says so much lyrically. And then you come into Now and Then, and that's your look back to The Long and Winding Road that got you here. Just, yeah. I mean, I'm being obviously...
That's a good point. I mean, it would have been... I don't know. To me, The Long and Winding Road is not my favorite song. Well, at least that version with the Spectre. I like the Anthology 3 demix thing. I like the Let It Be Naked demix. So I can't complain about the song itself. I can complain more about the production on it.
Got it.
So, that was my basic, additional thing about the whole thing. Within You, Without You, does it belong on this album? You know,
It's his Eastern.
Right, and it's right.
Eastern ways,
There's no inner light on this, and maybe Ringo should have had a second song with "Don't Pass Me By."
Interesting.
I think "Good Night" would have worked better.
"Good Night." The only thing that's hard about that, Mitch, is where do you put it?
I know.
Yeah, "Good Night" has to be a end, closer. And it's the closer of the White Album, so that's But anyway,
anybody have anything last before we wrap this up?
No, it's what I got.
All right, good. So we have talked ad nauseum about the Blue Album. We hope you enjoyed it. And quite frankly, let us know what you feel about the Blue, about things like I Am the Walrus and Old Brown Shoe and everything we discussed. So, and let us know your additional songs that you would have put on. It's a little different than the Red because there's not as many, it seems like, that would have been on here that would have fit because of some of the lyrics, which, as we mentioned, might have drug references or whatever. So anyway.
Yeah, but they're not keeping track of that.
I know. But, anyway, so for Fab Four Free For All, I have been your moderator, Mitch Axelrod, and joining me for this blue episode, not blue as in sexy and porno, but this blue episode have been Rob Leonard.
Thank you for listening.
And Tony Trugardo.
So I will hope to talk to you soon, folks.
And we will talk to you very soon. Take care.
Fab Four Free For All was edited and produced by Tony Triguardo at Word of Mouth Studios in Westbury, New York.
The opening and closing theme is My Dolly by the band The Badge, featuring longtime listener Jeff Slate, available on its debut album Digital Retro and recent Best Of compilation, as well as from the Fab Four Free For All website.
Thanks for listening to Fab Four Free For All.